Huzzah, Rangers. This is Phil Harris here at the Jacks Rangers show. We've got Dave McVeigh, Diamond Dave, here with us. Dave, how the hell are you?
Doing very well, Phil.
Excellent. We've got the Free Jack COO, Dave Jones, here with us. Dave, how the hell are you?
Doing great, thanks. How are you guys?
Excellent. Thank you for joining us. I did want to mention our sponsor, Inkify. Inkify is joining this episode as a sponsor, just like every single episode. They do custom printing and embroidery since 2010. Inkify provides high-quality decorated apparel nationwide, from ordering the apparel, printing, adding a private label, folding, bagging, and fulfillment. They handle it all, so you don't have to. Visit Inkify.com to get started on your order and tell them TJRS sent you, and you'll get 15% off your entire order. That is a hell of a deal. Let's talk to Dave Jones now, this new CEO, COO of the Free Jacks. You joined in November. That's what Mags was telling us in the previous interview that we had on last Thursday. Tell us about your origin story with rugby and tell us where you're from, sir.
Grew up in Dublin, Ireland. That's where I was born there. I lived there for just under 25, moved to the States then. My origin with rugby, you know, when I grew up, it was, you had three choices: Gaelic football, soccer, or rugby. They were the one of those three. If you're into sport at all, that was it.
Right.
And the school I went to, rugby was the option. So, but, you know, Six Nations, or as it was back then, Five Nations rugby, like, was a thing every year. You didn't miss a game since you're like 5 years of age. You were stuck on the couch with your family, and that was it.
Sure.
So started playing when I was 7 years of age. I remember that. Yeah. Continued, small school, played right the way through school, finished up in school, went to play club rugby, and then moved over here. When I came over here, I played, my initial rugby activities were with New York Irish, down in Queens, and then moved up to Westchester in New York and played for White Plains for a short period of time.
All right.
And then a career change had me cease my rugby playing days. So that was
gotcha.
So that's kind of my rugby background. Yeah, pretty short and sweet.
Love that. What position did you play?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I started scrum half, and they kept moving me further and further away. So I ended up with fullback. So I think that was kind of a telling sign. If there was an extra position behind fullback, I probably would end up there. But yeah, so pretty much throughout the back line. But
I think after 15 is the bench, right?
I was really good at that position.
There you go. Me too. Absolutely. B-side for life.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your professional background, because you did come over to the United States. What's your professional background involved in?
So when I was in the car business for many years. I worked in the car rental business in management.
Okay.
Worked at, managed and ran some of the airports for Avis and National Car Rental in New York. Hmm. And I took a big change of career and got involved in the golf business.
Wow.
Yeah. Obviously... Yeah, you know, I think when you look at your life changes and life careers, I mean, what I've learned from myself is that, you know, doing something that you love makes work a lot easier.
Sure.
And so I got to that point where golf was a passion as well as rugby, and so golf was something I was halfway good at, and so I fumbled my way into being a golf professional, and as a club professional rather than a, you know, playing professional, you're really much more around the business side of the game than you are actually playing, even though playing and teaching was a big part of it. So basically, I worked for 25 years as a club professional in New York and Connecticut mostly, running country clubs, running everything, from the shops to the events to, the managing the staff and all that kind of stuff. So that was really kind of the background. And then that's my sort of managerial sporting background, if you want.
All right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you went from one passion, golf, to your other passion, rugby, transitioned and became the COO of the Free Jacks in November. I am famously not a golf guy, but I have a mean putt-putt game. Like mini golf, I'll tear anybody up. Any Rangers want to challenge me, I will kick your ass in putt-putt for sure. But yeah, let's talk about the Free Jacks. Like, how did this come about? What is your specific COO? A lot of people may not know what that exactly is. Tell us what that role is, and how did you choose this?
I retired from the golf business 8 years ago, and I've been living in South Carolina. And was quietly just going about playing golf, playing tennis. A good friend of mine who I've known for well over 40 years. We grew up in Dublin together, and we've moved throughout the States and the world. Mm-hmm. Dave Barry, one of the owners of the Free.
Yep. So we know Dave. Dave's got awesome.
He's a great guy, a great family man. So he and I have been really good buddies for a long, long time. And, you know, so while my speed of life was going very slow in South Carolina, Dave said, hey, look, there might be an opportunity with the Free Jacks. Would you be interested? So we had a chat, and, you know, COO, Chief Operating Officer, I mean, titles, whatever they want. I mean, you can call it whatever. It doesn't really matter. I mean, just an opportunity to get involved in the business side of the project. And I think with the passion for rugby and having seen what it was like having a career working in an industry like golf, where you know, you love what you're doing and being around. So now being around rugby is similar. It's definitely very interesting. So it was just an opportunity to come in and, you know, just join a really strong team of people and be able to share and, you know, more sort of an outside look at things and, you know, throw a few, you know, ideas at what they're doing. And but yeah, an opportunity to come in and be involved in the Free Jacks. I mean, my only I was the only game I went to prior to being here was I was at last year's Eastern Conference final. I flew up to the here, so
okay,
got to see a winning baptism for me, which was awesome. And I'd met a few of the players before. Bob's and a sevens organization called the Jesters.
Oh yeah, sure, yep.
Each year they have a great tournament in Glendale in Denver. And mm-hmm. Over the years, I've gone out and watched the event and hang out with Dave and his family. And we've had some Free Jacks play. I mean, John Pollen, Wayne Vanderbank. Mentioned but a few you know, Jackson Teeves played, I believe, so met a few of the guys out there. And so just, you know, been talking, and since Dave's been an owner of the Free Jacks, I've always been kind of keyed in and kind of got his ear on what's been going on. So it's certainly a very dynamic and interesting business.
It sure is. Dave Barry is a connector of a lot of things in rugby, man. Like, he's all over the place. Every time I talk to him, I'm really, really impressed with Dave. He's fantastic. A lot of great Daves in New England rugby. Yourself, Dave Bay,
Team Dave.
David Barry. There's David Lawrence. I mean, that right there is just four amazing rugby people. So, yeah, very, very good. Let's see here. What are some operational short-term and long-term goals for this club now that you've taken over this role?
You know, I'd say short term, you know, operationally, you know, I suppose, you know, if you kind of take a step back and sort of say, you know, last year was a massively successful year for the Free. You know, you can't do much more than win the championship.
Right.
With the owners involved, you know, there's an investment, and you know, it's a losing investment on their part. I mean, the Free Jacks is a growth business. It's a startup business.
Right.
And so it's very important. If you look at what happened at the end of last year with the unfortunate situations with Toronto and New York leaving, it's very important to build a model that's sustainable. So other teams can look at the Free Jacks and say, okay, we won the championship in 23, mm-hmm. you know, if somebody else was interested in getting involved in a MLR team or starting an MLR team and growth, they'd say, so how do you do that? Mm-hmm. And so financially, you know, you make it sustainable and you say, okay, you know, if you just throw money at it and can win, is that a good model? Mm-hmm. And so the correct answer is no. The answer is to do it on a return on investment property where you're in. Well, you're in it for the passion for the game, but there has to be a point where, you know, we're doing our best, obviously grow the game, put a great product on the field, but do it in a very responsibly fiscal way. So if other investors look at the go, how are they doing it? Mm-hmm. Look, you know, it's a good model, and you know, and that's hopefully something that people can learn off, grow off. So short term and long term would really be sort of being able to, you know, work the system to a very controlled budget, and you know, allow the Free Jacks sort of, you know, grow as the fan base grows, as things grow around the Free Jacks. So there's a, you could possibly look at a return on investment for the owners.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, that's reasonable. Like, hey, if I'm an investor, I'm throwing a couple Bitcoins you guys' way. I want to see the return. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah. So, well, return is more, you know, I don't think any of them are looking to make money off of this. I mean,
sure.
Game, growth of the game. But obviously, they're smart businessmen, and they'd like to see you know, the money used in there as best way possible.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes a ton of sense to try to make this thing sustainable, or as sustainable as possible, as we continue down the road with the growth of the game within this country. Give me an idea of your typical non-game day, you know, day in the life of Dave, you know, the COO, and then on game day, because I know that you work your butt off on game day, getting everything squared away, having to put your hand in some Port-a-Johns to unclog them, as Mags was saying, you know. Yeah.
There's elements of game day which are a little different than others. But, you know, an average game day is, you know, if you think about it, I mean, we do so much preparation for those 8 events at home, hopefully 10, but we have 8 structured, you know, and 8 events. You know, as far as the rugby side and the guys, you know, dance to PK, there's a, you know, we pretty much leave them to their devices. And the last thing they want is for a guy like me to be involved in, you know, pointing out coaching skills to those guys. That's not my expertise at all.
Sure.
Going downhill, you know, that's where I went. But no, so it's kind of, you know, it's liaising with those guys, just kind of making sure everything's in place. Day to day, you know, my job would be really just trying to find out in what way any of the guys, I mean, the team is small for what the product we put on the field. I mean, it really is a small operation, and just trying to help in any way for, you know, all the backgrounds. I mean, the social media guys, the guys doing all the work, the ticketing, the, you know, is that the merchandising, is there a way that I can help them do their job better with less sort of headaches, or is there operational things that we can do that can, you know, make it a little bit easier. And so and be as efficient as possible, prioritize where we can go. So, and just looking at all those kind of things. And then, you know, as it leads in, you know, your average day as it leads in towards game days changes. I mean, I start find myself back in, you know, more in the stadium as we lead into game days, kind of getting things ready and that ends. And, you know, so it's a very dynamic environment.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, listen, I've seen you work your butt off there on game day. So, you know, I'm sure you're getting your steps in for sure on that particular day, whether it be a Saturday or a Sunday. So, yeah, very, very cool to see. Absolutely. What's it like working with Mags on a daily basis? Mags fascinates me. Like, anytime I'm talking to this guy, my ears are just tuned in to every word he's saying. I mean, he's clearly a genius, like a man among boys.
Who?
Mags, our boy, General Mags.
Who? They said work with Mags on a daily basis. Pardon, Mags is unbelievable. He really is incredible. And to see, you know, what fascinates me, you're right. He probably is a genius, because there's so many elements and facets to what goes into putting the product on the field. It's team players that run out of the tunnel and all the other moving parts. You know, and he's got a handle on everything. I mean, it's very impressive. I mean, he's so keyed into his numbers. You know, he popped things up. You know, he's and he, what actually fascinates me is his passion for it is unbelievable.
Yeah,
his dedication to what he does. I mean, he's a family man, and yeah, I don't know how often he sees his kids, because he's, you know, he's readily available for, you know, and as you know, I mean, his office is up in New Hampshire. So he's on, you know, he lives his life, you know, interacting with all of us with chats and everything else. So, which I find very difficult. I'm more of a face-to-face kind of guy, but he's built a model that works for him. And yeah, very impressive, and work ethic, and just his mind is always going, always looking for new things. And, you know, that's, you know, it's impressive to watch the creativity of it. And, you know, sometimes there's the odd curveball, which may not be always there, but not always, you know, worth going through with. But certainly to see the dedication and the effort and the imagination as well. I mean, it's very impressive. It really is.
It sure is. And, you know, long may his reign as CEO of the Free Jacks continue, because, you know, it starts from the top. It starts from the top with the whole organization, and just everybody's fantastic. And that's Mag's leadership that has really gotten this whole thing to where it is today. And we owe him a lot with this show, you know, supporting the show behind the scenes and coming on this show, you know, like at least once a season. He always comes through for us, which is really, really appreciated. Let's talk about the last home game. There were some long lines entering Fort Quincy and long lines at the food concession. What is the club trying to do to combat this going forward?
You know, a little bit of a perfect storm on St. Patrick's Day. You know, it kind of, the weather was perfect. Things kind of happened all at the same time around 1:30 in you should know better. You're up there hanging out and tailgating. You know, they can't be rocking in a quarter.
That's not my vibe, but I understand a lot of people like to get in as many beers in the tailgate or talk to as many people as possible before they head in.
No question that, you look at, you know, here we are in a high school stadium in Quincy, you know, with over 4,000 people coming in. You know, one of the priorities that we have to ensure everyone's safety. I mean, that's just a massive part of what we do. And get through a thing like St. Patrick's Day, where we had over 4,000, nothing of any instance happening. Everything was pretty plain sailing. Yeah, you're right. It's tough that there's some issues with, you know, lines, that we are looking at ideas and ways of improving on that. Getting people into the stadium is something that we will definitely be addressing. And, you know, some of the people that you probably don't see from, you know, the behind the scenes guys who are working, you know, Mark Drago is one of his, you know, a VP of operations at the stadium. He's a tremendous liaison for us with the city, and he's very creative with event management and stuff like that. And he's been working, and he'll come up with a few solutions. And, you know, we'll probably, you know, the one thing we're talking about is, you know, obviously our regular season ticket holders and VIPs, you know, the guys who are coming to every game. You know, let's see if, you know, there's over, you know, 1,200 of those, 1,300 of that ticket holder style person now. So we can find a way to get them in a different gate, and maybe that alleviate some of the big lines at the front.
Love that.
That's definitely
love that idea.
You know, when it comes to the vending and, you know, the concessions and the beer lines and everything else, you see the footprint. It's pretty small. Mm-hmm. It's not a massive area where you can do a whole lot. True. So we'll certainly try to look at ways. I mean, there's ways of, you know, point of sale issues, or, you know, transactions taking too long, or. Mm-hmm. But when you get that perfect storm that we had in St. Patrick's Day, where everyone kind of came in at the same time. So you've waited 20 minutes to get in, or more. Maybe it was a bit longer in some cases, but let's just say on average you waited 20 minutes to come in. First thing you want to do is grab a drink, probably.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Bathroom. So everyone's trying to hit the same things at the same time, which, you know, let me say this to you. You know, there's 4,000 people in the stadium. If we wanted no bathroom lines whatsoever, we put up 4,000 porta potties, right?
Right.
No. So somewhere, take 1 to 4,000. Somewhere in there is a good number. Mm-hmm. And it's with the footprint and the size of the state and everything else, there's only so much to do. So we certainly look at that, but we have to be cognizant of safety and, you know, managing the people as best we can. And so obviously there's far smarter people than me involved, and they've been doing this longer than I have, and they know the state better than I do. But I think the biggest thing, Phil, I would say, is to make sure that each time we improve, you know, if we keep chipping away at it and we keep moving and fixing, you know, can we get it perfect? That would be a brilliant model. Yeah. But in the real thing, you know, we've got a game of rugby going on. We have other activities happening. You know, it's a short burst of excitement for the rugby. It's 90 minutes. It's you know, so if you think about it, those standpoints, it's very concentrated effort in a small environment to get it done. Certainly, do whatever we can to protect the safety of people for sure, but also people along and make the fan experience has to be enjoyable. And, you know, also, you know, I also look at the staffing, being, you know, we have to make sure that we, you know, we're staffed up correctly. So we're not exhausting people. We're, you know, we're looking after the people who are helping us, and we make sure it's a good experience for everybody.
Dave, I think you've provided a long but perfect answer to that question. I mean, listen, I love the idea of founding members or season ticket holders having their own entrance. I think that is brilliant. I hope you guys go through with that, and I'll be first in line to experience that. I cannot wait. My final questions for you this evening are regarding Belfast. Now, I'm going to be flying over with the Independents for 6 days to watch them play the Ulster Academy. I know you have a connection to the Ulster team. Tell us about that real quick.
I do. My nephew, Greg Jones, is a professional rugby player. He plays for Ulster.
Okay. What position? So I'll be able to see him. He'll be playing the next day, right? Or Saturday?
No, unfortunately, he's on the outs this year. He's not having luck. He's on the outs a bit this year, but he will probably. I doubt if he'd be in the squad to play Leinster on that Saturday. Gotcha. But he's been on contract with Ulster now. I think this is his fifth season.
Wow. Okay, that's awesome.
I was talking to Wheels last night, and we were looking at some ideas. So actually, I was talking to him yesterday. We're on the phone to him in Ulster because we're obviously trying to wrap down a few things. So that's my connection with the Ulster. So it was actually through him that Wheels reached out to Gavin Hogg, who's been his counterpart at the Academy. Excellent. And so it's been a great connection.
That's awesome.
So certainly, perhaps now that he may not be in the squad or the match day 23 for the Leinster game, he'd have some time to entertain you guys and show you around a little bit and see what's
going on. Love that. Maybe one day he can head over to the Free Jacks and play. Because we don't have enough Irishmen on the team. That's kind of something that I've talked about, and I've talked to Dave Barry about. I mean, he was like, well, you've got an Irish owner, so that's great. But, you know, we want to have a couple more Irish boys on the team. I just think that makes some marketing sense.
More American. Come on.
Of course. We always, I mean, I'm wearing red, white, and blue, brother. Like, you know, that, of course, is the ultimate goal, but we'd love to have a couple more UK or Irish players. That's just,
you know, it's interesting. Yeah. So the model of bringing, someone, believe me, I've thrown the carrot in front of Greg and say, hey, if your career at Ulster ever comes to an end and you want to, if you think there's an opportunity, maybe he's not good enough. So if you can't make Ulster, he probably couldn't make the free game.
I don't know about that. I mean, we're good, but I don't know about that. So next one here is I wanted to ask you tourist recommendations for me in Belfast. What would be rather 6 whole days? Like, I know about, you know, the Game of Thrones tour and the Titanic Museum, but like, what's some specialties that you can offer just in that entire region that I might not know about?
You know, it's not a huge stomping ground for me. I'm not that familiar with Belfast, but okay. Actually, this conversation we were having last night with Wheels and Greg and myself. So I think things you can do outside of the rugby, there's a thing called a black cab tour.
Okay, and yep.
Apparently takes you around some of the terrorist activities and some of the stuff. So if you know your history at all, north, it'll take you some of the dirty places and show you some of the good stuff that happened back there, good or bad stuff that happened back in the days. So that's supposed to be a good one. Obviously, Titanic thing you mentioned. Yep. If you have time and a drive, it's about probably an hour and a half drive out of Belfast, maybe an hour. Head up to the Bushmills.
Okay.
And that's up there on the Portrush coast. It's just fabulous coastline. You got the Giant's Causeway. So that's a treat to look at and see that stuff. It's fabulous. But Belfast, yeah, I'm not that familiar with it, unfortunately. So there's not a whole lot of things I could tell you outside of probably what you don't know already. But I'd say fun. I mean, the thing on the rugby is obviously you'll have the captain's run for Leinster and Ulster on Friday, which would be worth a look to see what's going on there.
Would love to see that, yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we'll see how things play out with tickets and stuff. I mean, if it's, I don't know how big that game could be. It's always a good rivalry, but keep me in the loop if you're struggling for a ticket or two. Maybe I'll be able to sort you out.
That would be great, Dave. I appreciate that. And listen, I mean, you've suggested some great stuff here. Like, who wouldn't like to drink some whiskey and go check out the causeway there or whatever it's called? The coastline itself is going to be beautiful, and it's going to look even better if I'm just lit off of whiskey. You know what I mean? So, good times.
The Bushmills is a good little spot, yeah. You might get the game. That's the only problem.
All right. Well, I'm going to let Dave take over. I appreciate your time. And, yeah, thank you for coming on.
No problem, guys. Awesome. Great to see you both. Thanks for having me on. And reach out, and we'll see you at games anytime soon.
Yeah. I got a bunch more questions for you here, Dave. So don't no worries. Not done yet. But my first one is about the match coming up. In his interview, Mags really accurately predicted the final ticket count for the St. Patrick's Day Fest a few days before. He was like, "Oh, we'll come in just a little right above 4,000," and that, from what I hear, it's exactly what we hit, second highest ever. How are things tracking for the Miami Yacht Rock Festival in a couple weeks?
You know, not a whole lot of movement going on. I mean, we're coming off back to back home games, which is a very difficult thing for us in March, obviously. Yeah. So the way things are tracking, I mean, we're very fortunate now that our season members are growing. You know, we're almost up 1,200 in that capacity. So that's almost like, you know, you have that as a given. As what happens, I mean, this time of year, it's being an outdoor sport when the weather is very questionable. We get that. Now, Mag's had the luxury of being on 3 days before, and we could see what the weather. My crystal ball is 2 weeks out. I don't quite have that luxury at the moment. Look, it would be fantastic for us if we can get anything near the number. You know, we had just over 3,000 for the first game, and we had just over 4 for the second. So if we can get in or around that 4,000 mark for every game, that's kind of our target. Mm-hmm. So, that would be a fantastic thing for us to do if we could hit. You know, if we can get to. You know, my goal, I'd say if I was to give you a guesstimate of where we're standing and the weather cooperates, we've been very fortunate with the weather so far. I'm going to predict, I'm going to say 3475. How's that?
Nice. I like it. I appreciate a good bold prediction. Willingness to get out over your skis.
I'm hoping I'm way off and it's 4,200 and something. But
Yeah. Absolutely. No, just the chutzpah to make a prediction this far out. I like it. My next question is, how many people does it take to make match day happen? Not counting vendors, you know, and other, but Free Jacks staff. How many guys do you have in there on a match day keeping everything moving?
Well, we couldn't do it with just our staff. We have the key people we have running game day. Mario Gordon and Mark Drago do a phenomenal job leading into it. We have our merchandiser, Alex Grayling, who's, you know, he works his butt off, not only doing other things, you know, getting everything ready for the merch, but also getting ready, you know, he's responsible for the names on the jerseys and other things that involved around game day. You know, liaising with rugby are very good. Javier, you know, TK, Colton, all the guys, they all, you know, it's a big sort of marriage of people doing, everyone kind of chipping in. To be honest with you, game day couldn't happen without our volunteers, our interns. We've a lot of bodies that come in. You know, some raw have no idea what's going on, and they get great direction from the likes of Mary and Mark, and they you know really steer them in the right direction. And you know, but it's those kind of additional bodies where you know some of it may be redundant kind of work, where maybe you're sitting at a table just taking tickets or something like that. But they're absolutely 100% necessary. So all these little things, I mean, I don't know if you ever get a chance to walk up and see the kids zone, the explorers area. We've got some of the non-23 players, the red shirts are playing, they're up there helping out. You know, you've seen the sock drop. I mean, the players helping with that. So the players also have contributed immensely, and that helps just all those little things that need to be done. Like I say, whether it's just taking a ticket, whether it's somebody, you know, putting a VIP band on somebody. I mean, all those are volunteer positions. You know, Wheel Z and his academy guys, that they've, you know, they created a couple of good opportunities this year. You know, we have, he did a program with Beantown and the ladies there where, you know, we give them some time in the gym and help them with some coaching stuff. And they give us, you know, a few people to help with game day. So there's a liaison there that's really working well. We have some of his academy players that help out on game day. So it's all those little pieces that come together. I mean, that's the volunteer side of things. And obviously we staff up, we bartenders and those type of people. They're outside vendors that we pay, but certainly the volunteers, the interns we use, and some of our key people who like I said, Marilyn Mark, and you got AG, and you got Bucks with social media and the videography and the photography and everything else. He's got a team of people that help him. So it's just lots and lots of moving parts. And it's bodies in the right places.
Yeah, that's excellent. Certainly sounds like a lot to coordinate. I don't envy those guys for having to keep everything operating on the day with all those volunteers and various pieces.
No, they're phenomenal. They're really good. I mean, it's think about it. It's eight, or like I said earlier, hopefully 10 times a year. It's a lot of, it's a big, big burst of energy right at that moment. So good for them. They're phenomenal.
Any rejected or maybe just deferred to next year festival ideas that you want to drop on us? We love the Free Jacks festivals. I mean, I'm already thinking, hit the links. How about a golf theme? That'd be a strong festival theme.
Creativity and wonderful ideas are definitely not my strong. I mean, Ollie Gilpin and Mags, they're the geniuses. Speaking of Ollie, you saw last week at St. Patrick's Day, the festival banners, the jersey on the field. I mean, these designs and stuff. I mean, it's off the charts. How good this is. It really is. It's top class. Mags is the festival side. So let's just say maybe there's a few things that are on the floor of the production room that may not make it. There was rumors. They were asking me about some hot tub thing that was going on. I have to get.
We did have the hot tub last season. At some point, they had fans out there in it. It was quite a hoot.
Yeah, things like hot tubs and animals and other things. I certainly would be. They'd have to talk me into it. I'd have to have a pretty good hard think about this stuff, but. As far as anything on the, I'll defer and say, don't know.
All right. Fair. That's very fair. Diplomatic answer. Yeah. Are you allowed to have a favorite player? And if so, who is it?
I'm not, and I don't have any. It's really interesting is you get involved in a rugby team and you think it's part. I have not seen a game yet, so I have I've seen highlights and all that kind of stuff, it's a very interesting concept of you have to sort of pinch yourself every so often and say, well, why are you here? And you're here because of the rugby. So I go down. I literally have to sort of, I'll get in my car and I'll go watch a practice for half an hour just to kind of remind yourself of why you're doing this, because game days are obviously hectic for us and we don't get to have the luxury of seeing what's going on. Favorite players, obviously, I watch what Reese is doing this year and it's just incredible. I mean, it's so fun to see a guy with that amount of energy and things going well and he's just being so creative and scoring tries, and it becomes habitual. You see a guy like that and you just the energy he produces. I mean, so no, he's not my favorite player, but certainly I love to see that sort of activity out of someone, and someone like that getting results. I mean, the back line's creative. I mean, Seta had a game last week in the back row, which is off the charts. I mean, really so strong and so, just really all over the park. I mean, so it's great to see that too. So, I love to say I had a favorite player. Maybe they ask me that at the end of the season when I've seen all the games and I can kind of maybe sit back and be a bit more knowledgeable of exactly what they all do. But I tell you what I do see as far as favorite players and everything else. There's characters and there's energy off the field, which is, to me, I just love seeing that. And some of these guys may not be in the Match Day 23. They may be more behind-the-scenes players and stuff you don't see all the time. There's just a phenomenal camaraderie amongst this group. I mean, I really see that. I mean, I was up with the parade with them on Sunday after the game. And you think about it, guys, they get beat up. They train all week. They play the game on Saturday. They're just exhausted. And yet, here they are rocking up to do, put their best foot forward for, you know, it was, the bus had 35 people on it going down through the parade. So, I mean, kudos to these guys, and that's a huge ask. And then we were in the Senate today, we were called, and, you know, it's a day off in game, in a game week leading into, and these guys dedicate their time again. So you think about that sort of, you know, give back to the community, and more, it's not about me, it's more about the team. I see a lot of that, really do. It's awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yep.
This year, the team moved to a new platform for ticketing. What are some of the benefits that the SeatGeeks platform brings both to us as fans who are going to be coming to the match and buying tickets and all that, and to the organization?
Well, you know, I'll defer because I don't know much about what happened before.
That's so fair.
I can't really speak about what was going on down before. I know in Griffin and Josh are our two ticketing guys, and yeah. You know, obviously leading into it, anytime you've got a, you know, your first game with a brand new platform and everything else, there's some hiccups and some small stuff. And I know Griffin was, you know, just putting in different codes and working his until all hours of the morning before the first game to get things right. Then that's, you know, is that, should that happen? No, but it's probably teething problems that you'd have to live with. I think putting everything for us on one platform, allowing, you know, things that he's looked at before, you know, what last year, the information and the structure we were using versus what SeatGeek offers, transferability, sellability of tickets, all those kind of things. I don't know of how many emails he was getting last year with difficulties about our ticket situation and versus what they are now. I know there was some initially, but I think, you know, leading into game two, it went much smoother. Once again, this improvement level, you know, things getting better. Yeah. And so I think for us, I think is scanning and all the kind of stuff, people coming through, you know, we'll use the SeatGeek to the capacity. So that's a question. I really don't have a lot of depth of knowledge of how to compare it to anything. But I think they're fairly comfortable and happy with our partnership with SeatGeek for now and what they're doing for us and, you know, making it easy for the fans to not only purchase the tickets, but to be able to use them, transfer them, sell them, etc., if need be.
Yeah, the flexibility seems like a pretty big win for fans. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, they did have to do a lot of manual fixing in previous seasons. You know, customer service was pretty, you know, direct and discreet. Yep, email me, I will fix it. And it took a lot of that kind of interaction. So hopefully that platform really frees some of that up so they can focus on other areas and fans are still taken care of, have all their needs met.
Agreed, yeah.
Final question.
Yeah.
We have heard that many people wear many hats around the Free Jacks, TK moving mattresses upstairs, you know, famously. Mags repairing facilities. Phil and I were there in the early days, and you'd see Mags, you know, we're Phil and I big dorks, so before we even knew each other, both there like hours early, right? Just yep, I'm just gonna stand around and watch, you know, a rugby match slowly form in front of my eyes as fans come in and staff come in. It's pretty magical. But there was Mags running around hauling, you know, stuff to merch stations and
goalposts, putting that up,
yeah, setting up goalposts and everything. So people do a lot of different stuff. Is there anything that has been somewhat unexpected that you've had to do or gotten to do since coming on board with the Free Jacks?
Wow, that's interesting. Any chance you have videos of Mags doing that kind of stuff? I'd like to see.
Unfortunately not. It's just all up here. It's all up here now.
I used to stop him occasionally as he was walking busily across. Oh, hey, how you doing? I at least tried to slow him down and make it as hard as we could on him.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, guys, is like, I think, you know, like I said, it's the 8, 9, 10 game situation. You know, yeah. It's exhaustive. What's key for someone like me and the operation, I think, is to watch. You know, it's how you finishing, you know, the lights go off, you know, is that door closes? Is that it? It's the better you leave the place, you know, the easier it is to get it going for the next one. And I think, you know, at the end of a season, you're just, I mean, I'm, you know, after one game, I was like, what just happened? You know, and that's, I'm game two in the books. I can only imagine after game 9 or 10, you're just, you're shot. And it's probably easy to close the door and just kind of, you know, once. So I think just that's probably a very challenging thing for people to kind of get revved up after the game to kind of sort of do an sort of, I won't say a cleanup, but kind of an organization thing and sort of get in. So if you ask me some of the surprises and kind of, and I just, it's all in my mind justifiable now when I see, having seen two games live and activity and the amount of work, you know, that goes into it and the amount of work these guys do, you know, I find myself just saying, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, and it's that, so as a sort of, you know, what have I seen that I didn't think I would expect would be sort of that sort of, you know, how to handle the post game,
yeah,
well as the prep leading into it. And that's been something that's been very challenging, actually, because it's difficult. I mean, you think about it, you've asked volunteers to give all day of their time, you know, they're all exhausted. Then you say, excuse us, can you come help us, you know, put some tents away? Can you do this, that, and the other? And, you know, it's just, it's, and that's where you see the stars, and that's where the Mariel and the Mark of the world were, you know. They rock up and they're really, you know, they're still going flat out at, you know, 8 o'clock at night when it's all over. So that's where it's tremendous work by everybody on that. That's, it's a long day.
Yeah. And it really is. Especially on those tournament days, right? Where they're, you know, they might, the Heritage Cup, they had matches kicking off at like 8 a.m., something like that. That's a 12 hour outdoor day.
We go into the next one now. We go into the Monumental Sevens. Game is like 7:20, and then the Ajax game doesn't kick off till 4:30.
Wow, long day.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. So, and the second part of your question, Dave, sorry, was,
I think that was mostly it. Just what was unexpected, you know, a little bit surprising about the role. So,
I think the effort. Answer. I think the amount of things that go on. You know, it's such a dynamic environment for that sort of several hours. And you hope that you're not putting out fires. You know, you hope that it's all smooth sailing, but it's just the natural, you know, like I say, it's a high school stadium. It wasn't designed for running a major production like these guys put on, which is, you know, and the logistics of it. I mean, all, you know, stuff is stored in the garage at the back left of the stadium. Got to be brought all the way to the front, then back, and front, you know, so the logistical issues, which, you know, are just difficult to deal with, but they deal with. We, you know, we get on with it, and it gets done. And so you see people walking around with ice bags and trolleys and beers and all kinds of stuff, and it's just, you know, it's great to see people putting that effort in. Yeah, wait till it warms up. I can't imagine what these poor guys are going to be doing with like 80 degrees. Yeah. Now I'm getting so. Yeah, very, very, very sort of hectic environment, but really, really, really good to see. And, you know, that, like I said earlier, I mean, and you guys were there on Saturday, and even I had time to sort of sit back for a minute or two on Saturday and just, you know, look in the stands and see the fun and see the activity and see everybody having a good time. Off the charts.
Yeah, it was a really fun atmosphere. I would say really one of the best, you know, most enjoyable in terms of just energy that we've seen there at Fort Quincy. Thank you for everything you do for the Jacks and for rugby in New England. And it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I'll kick it back over to Phil to close things out, but I appreciate your time very much.
Likewise, Dave. Yeah.
All right. So Dave, let's get you out of here in a moment. You've been very, very generous with your time. Every single time we have somebody on here, we ask them one thing. Actually, it's just really opening up the floor for you to speak directly to the Free Jacks fans, the Rangers out there. What do you have to say to them?
To the fans out there, keep coming. We'll keep trying. You know, an incredible event, great time. You know, history shows that, you know, Fort Quincy is a great home advantage. Mm-hmm. And if rugby is not necessarily, you know, what you want to come for, you want to come for the fact, come for the activities, you want to come for the celebration and a good day out, it's an event. And so you know, if you see me around, come say hi, and if you got any issues, the door is always open. Mm-hmm. Certainly happy to you know, lend my ear to anything that we think different or better. We're always trying, and can't do it better, I'll give you a reason for it. But certainly, you know, my experience at the first two home games have been a bit crazy, but certainly I can see why fan base is growing. You know, I that's the one thing I see. I see these numbers, you know, of the season ticket holders going up, and that shows to me that the product is very sustainable. And I would say, keep it coming, keep it growing. Let's have more fun. Let's have more wins, and let's have great days.
Hell yeah. Great way to put it, for sure. We're going to exit this particular episode by saying one word, and in 3, 2, 1, huzzah!